Recorded live.
Welcome to Camp Constitution Radio. I am your host, Hal Shurtleff. I am the co-founder and director of Camp Constitution. And among other things, Camp Constitution runs a week-long summer camp program in beautiful Ringe, New Hampshire. This year's camp will run from July 12th to the 19th and Sunday to Sunday. And you can find out more about our camp by visiting campconstitution.net. You can also visit our online bookstore and see all of the things we have available, all the materials, books, reprints, some great material. Our guest today is Mr. Jim Perloff, and he should be calling in a few minutes. He is the author of several books. One of them is a book that we'll be talking about, Tornado Through a Junkyard, dealing with the evolution creation issue. But before we interview him, I'd like to just discuss some of the materials we have available on our camp bookstore. We have some a reprint of Robert Welch's Republics and Democracies. It's a speech that he gave back in the early 60s that deals with the difference between a republic and a democracy and the fact that our country was founded as a republic, not a democracy. We also have the sort of a free market classic, Sock Dolager, which is Davy Crockett and the story of Davy Crockett and how he was taught a very valuable lesson by one of his constituents when he was a congressman. So, and again, those are available on Camp Constitution, Camp Constitution's website. Just visit the bookstore. We also just published a book called Gems from the Gem Years. GEM was an early organization fighting big government's involvement in public education, government schools, and also homeschooling in the state of Maine. The group had a lot of impact, not only in Maine, but other parts of the country, and they were fighting some of the early versions of what is now Common Core, a very important organization, and we were able to make this available. The author is Bettina Dobbs, who's now 93 years of age. And anyway, our guest, Jim Perloff, I've known Jim since probably the mid-90s. He is the author of perhaps one of the most important books on the subject of the Council on Foreign Relations, entitled The Shadows of Power. He's also the author of the book we'll be talking about today, Tornado Through a Junkyard. So, Jim, are you there?
I'm here, Hal.
Oh, good. Okay. My screen doesn't say you called in, so hopefully this is recording and everything's going well. Well, Jim, you authored this book, Tornado Through a Junkyard, but I think before you talk about the book, let's talk a little bit about yourself. You weren't always a right-wing, Bible-thumping, fanatic Christian. So tell us a little bit about your background and sort of what brought you to where you are today.
You're right. I'm only a right-wing, Bible-thumping Christian now. No, I started out as a I grew up in a non-religious family. One thing that impacted me towards becoming a left-wing or a hippie was being taught the theory of evolution, which taught that the life had not been created by God, but instead had evolved by chance processes and Darwinian mechanisms. And but one day in the late 1970s, when I was in my mid to late 20s, I was looking at noticed a girl. She was reading Gary Allen's book, Nandera Color Conspiracy. And that book, when I got a copy of my own, really just changed my life. Which, you know, the Gary Allen had I mentioned the John Birch Society was fighting the oligarchy that was described in this book. And that brought me into contact with Birch headquarters, which were then at nearby Belmont, Massachusetts, me being a resident of Boston. And that led to an engagement writing for the Birch Society's publication, The New American, and one of my cover stories for them on the Council on Foreign Relations. We expanded into a book, The Shadows of Power, which has sold over 100,000 copies and has been a bestseller
And I would say it's probably one of the most important books for people who really want to understand. And if you're involved with any type of pro-freedom organization anywhere in the world, now, this is a shortwave station, so people who speak English that can hear the show should get a copy of this book, because if you think you've got the, you have an idea of what the problem is and you're not familiar with this very powerful organization, Council on Foreign Relations, if you're not familiar with it, then you're not really understanding the true nature of the enemy. Well, Jim, I know you and I have been friends for quite a long time, and you had told me about your college days that you were sort of a long-haired, hippy-dippy, pinko type, and so discussed some of that. And so before you read the book, I'm assuming that there was some questions you had already. It wasn't just you read a book and bingo, an epiphany, but probably certain things that were sort of leading you into that direction.
Well, as I matured, I was getting a little bit more conservative in my outlook, but things really did go bingo with that book, because mainstream media had painted such a consensus about events, which really actually didn't make sense. The mainstream media just explained history as this sort of random unfolding of events that really had no continuity or pattern. And it was Allen's book that really showed me there was an agenda driving this world government. And of course, in my new book, Truth is a Lonely Warrior, which in many ways updates The Shadows of Power, I talk about this whole pattern of history of world government and the advancement of the police state, the totalitarian state, the various false flags that have driven America into war, from the sinking of the Maine through the non-existent weapons of mass destruction in Iraq. But for today's subject, I'll just mention that in the mid-1990s, having been a Christian now for about 10 years, I was troubled by the whole story of origins, because when I'd been growing up, we taught that man evolved from these ape-like creatures, and it was very contradictory to the Bible. You know, when you read the Bible, you read that God created the heavens and the earth.
In the beginning, right? Wasn't talking about a baseball game, right?
Yeah, and then secular science says that the Big Bang created the heavens and the earth, and the Bible says that God created life forms, and Darwin says that random chemicals formed the first cells, which are our ancestors, and the Bible says that man was created in God's image. And the theory of evolution says we just evolved from these ape-like creatures, from tooth and claw survival of the fittest. So this is a big question for me, because I've been taught that was science, and we're supposed to respect science. I'm a registered nurse, and, you know, in medicine, we respect science. So I explored it, and when I read a book called What is Creation Science by Dr. Henry Parker and Dr. Gary Parker and Dr. Henry Morris, it really changed my life. It showed me that the whole theory of evolution was a house of cards, which it is, and it inspired me to write a book of my own, because my finding was that there were a great many books that just refuted the theory of evolution from one aspect or another, written by scientists, written by PhD guys who were not necessarily professional writers, and they made great points, but sometimes these points were communicated in a way that didn't necessarily easily lend themselves, they weren't user-friendly to the layman. And so I wanted to write a book that would communicate these ideas to the general public in an easy-to-read manner. And so that became Tornado in a Junkyard.
And let me say, though, to the listeners, that Jim's book is something that can be easily absorbed. I would say that the average high schooler would find it quite readable. It's not in, you're not, you use a lot of scientific, you talk a lot of science in there, but not in academic terms. Like some of these great books, I pick it up and I'm like, my goodness, you know, I'm not scientifically trained outside of, you know, what I had in high school and a little bit of college. So I'm not, you know, I think it was it Beebe, the one who wrote, I'm pronouncing his name right, Irreducible Complexities. His book is not for the for the layman. But your book definitely is.
Yes, and I use Behe's arguments, but I just try to make them very simple and easy to understand. And, of course, I was at Camp Constitution, which you're a big part
last
summer. And we gave it to the kids. And whenever I've spoken at Camp Constitution, these ideas have registered strongly with them. So this is something, you know, the Darwinist hope that people think, well, this is just a matter for the experts and that they won't investigate it. But this is something we really need to look at. And the reason I stress the importance of this is that Darwinism changed the way people in Western culture look at themselves and at God. Up until Darwin, we'd really been primarily a Christian culture. We understood we were created by God, and the Bible was our moral authority. Once Darwin planted the idea, with the help of many others, his successors and people who worked with him, to plant the idea that we just evolved and God had nothing to do with it. Once you do that, you create the idea that the Bible is an old myth. Well, the Bible is an old myth, then the Ten Commandments are an old myth. And once the Ten Commandments cease to carry any force, you get the kind of immoral culture, the really horrific culture that we now see America descending into. And so this is a very important thing for people to understand. And so I start by talking about all the people, myself included, Stalin included, Andrew Carnegie included when I give these talks, a lot of famous people and just regular people like myself who became atheists from being taught the theory of evolution and what impact that has had on our culture. And after we start talk about the relevance, then I switch to the science because, you know, an atheist will be quick to say, okay, maybe Darwinism had a social impact, but so what? It's as well proven as the laws of gravity, so why are you messing around with it? Well, that's where we start to really take it apart and show that it is a house of cards, that it is. By the way, this is a politically motivated theory, and I want to give you a quote from Darwin himself. Darwin did not advance this for the cause of science. Here's what Darwin himself said in 1873, quote, Lyell, he's referring to his friend Charles Lyell, evolutionist. Lyell is most firmly convinced that he's shaken the faith in the Bible far more efficiently by never having said a word against the Bible than if he'd acted otherwise. I have read lately Morley's Life of Voltaire, and he insists that direct attacks on Christianity, even when written when the wonderful force and vigor of Voltaire produce little permanent effect. Real good only seems to follow the slow and silent side attacks, unquote. So Darwin was living in Victorian England. You couldn't come out and say you were an atheist. You couldn't attack the Bible directly at that time. So what he did was very slyly introduce this idea that, hey, science shows we evolved from animals through natural selection, and without actually directly attacking the Bible, induced doubts in people's minds and let them fall away from the Bible that way. That was his plan. It had nothing to do with good science.
Well, you know, Jim, I remember my eighth grade science teacher. She was very pretty. I know most of the guys in the class had a crush on her. She's probably in her mid-20s, late-20s. And she didn't say, your parents are liars, the church is a lie. She just taught, and I'm sure she believed it. I don't think she was trying to destroy our belief. She believed what she was teaching, and so we listened to her on 5 days a week, and then we go to church on one day a week, and we read the Bible, and it causes some issues there, and that happens all over the world on a pretty much regular basis.
You know, ideology and teachings are sort of like a military situation. If you're outnumbered 5-1, you're going to lose. And what you just described is what's happening in our culture. A kid goes to church, as you say, one day a week, but the other five is getting bombarded with materialism and Darwinism and liberalism and so forth. And so just by being outnumbered ideologically, those ideas carry the weight in his mind. Unless his faith is strong, and his parents are able to take what he's been mistaught in school and show him where it's wrong.
I want to give you a check. Right now, give us a website where we can find copies of your book outside of Amazon. I'd rather go right to you directly so you don't have to give Amazon the 20%. So go ahead and do that.
Well, actually, I don't sell my books directly from my website, but people can read about them more there. My website is jamesperloff.com. My name is spelled Perloff. And I do have a link there. On the menu, you click on Creation Evolution. You can read more about this topic. And then you do have clickable links to Amazon. And by the way, the Birch Society sells Tornado in a Junkyard. You can get it there, too, and as well as in regular bookstores like Barnes & Noble.
Good. So also, I know in the book you address a number of issues. One of them is the racist aspect of evolution. And I think you qualify. You're not saying that evolutionists are necessarily racist, but a lot of the early evolutionists definitely were.
That's correct. I have a graphic in my book, something I found at the American Museum of National natural history, actually. And it shows, this is put together by Henry Fairfield Osborne of the museum in the 1920s, and it shows a progression of human evolution, and it starts with the Piltdown Man. That's labeled number one. I'm looking at the graphic right now. We now know that the Piltdown Man was a fraud, just like evolution itself. Then it progresses through the Neanderthal and Cro-Magnon, and then number nine is Negro, number 10 is Chinese, and 11 is white. And that actually was a factor. When we're talking about social implications, that was a factor in racism and eugenics, and what we saw in the early to middle part of the 20th century was Darwinism was very much a so-called scientific basis for racism. By the way, Karl Marx considered Darwinism a scientific basis for the class struggle. He said that the struggle for existence, which Darwin spoke of, was scientific evidence for the class struggle. And he actually sent a copy of Das Kapital, the proof sheets, to Darwin and offered to dedicate it to him. And Darwin thanked him, but declined, saying that he had some religious family members.
Now, you also wrote a book, I think it was called Darwin on Trial.
No, that was someone else. I wrote a book called The Case Against Darwin, which is very short.
I want to ask you a question. A lot of people have, I've heard this before, and I think you may have addressed it, that Darwin died reading the Bible, that he had some second thoughts. You think there's any truth to that, or is that just something, some wishful thinking?
I believe it's wishful thinking. The reason I say that, Hal, is that very responsible creation groups like Answers in Genesis investigated that story and found that it had no merit. It would be nice if it was true, but creationists themselves, in other words, non-evolutionists, have investigated that story and found that it has no merit.
You have a chapter in the book. It's one of my favorite chapters. You deal with a movie, Inherit the Wind, and how I think it was there was two, was there two versions of that movie, or was there just one?
The most famous one is the Spencer Tracy one, but there's another with George C. Scott and Jack Lemmon. And I was very honored that Jack Lemmon, I sent him a copy of Tornado in a Junkyard, and he sent me an endorsement of the book, which is now in the opening pages of the book. But the movie Inherit the Wind was originally a play on Broadway. It's used to give people a prejudice against Christianity in favor of evolution. And what it did, it portrayed the famous Scopes trial of 1925, which was an evolution versus creation trial. In Tennessee, they'd enacted a law called the Butler Act, which said you could not teach that man evolved from lower life forms. And it didn't outlaw any other teachings of evolution than that.
It's sort of interesting that in a southern state that's supposed to be on its face racist, that they passed something that was very much against racism.
Well, in the sense that we were just talking about, in the sense that Darwinism had led to many racist teachings. But in that case, the Scopes trial, the movie got it all wrong. And the movie is simply a propaganda piece. It shows John Scopes, this forthright biology teacher, teaching evolution. He's thrown in jail by the religious bigots. And in real life, John Scopes was not a science teacher. He was not jailed. It was not a jailable offense. He never suffered. The trial was not instigated by religious bigots, but by the ACLU, which was looking for a test case, and he was not a biology teacher. And in his autobiography, Center of the Storm, he admitted he had never taught evolution. So that the movie is a complete fiction designed to make Christians look like right-wing, ignorant fools and Bible thumpers, and supposed to make the evolutionists look like they're intellectual and free-thinking and rational and so forth.
Now, in the movie, the man who the famous attorney, well, William, the famous attorney that took the case,
Clarence Darrow,
and then the man who was supposed to defend the Christian or the evolution position, the creation position,
William Jennings Bryan, right?
William Jennings Bryan, yes. I mean, Bryan may ought to look like an idiot.
Yeah, well, you know, what I do in the book, Tornado in a Junkyard, the chapter on that is I contrast the movie script to the actual trial transcript. And in the movie, Brian says this. He says, quote, the way of science is the way of darkness. The people of this state have made it very clear that they do not want this zoological hogwash slobbered around the schoolrooms. That's the quote from the movie. Now, here's what he said in real life during the trial. He said, quote, "The Christian men and women of Tennessee know how deeply mankind is indebted to science. Give science a fact, and it is not only invincible, but of incalculable service to man," unquote. So you see, Brian was not against science, which is what the movie was trying to make him out to be. He was just against bad science, which is what Darwinism is.
And let me think. Now, you mentioned the German biologist, is it Haeckel or Haeckel?
Haeckel, yeah, Ernst Haeckel.
Ernst Haeckel, and some of the crazy drawings that I think are still used in some of these evolutionary textbooks today.
Right. He made drawings of, this is back around the late 19th century, he made drawings of embryos, and he showed a human embryo next to animal embryos, and they looked identical in their early stages, and he said, did this prove we all came from a common ancestor, which is one of the root ideas, central ideas of Darwin's teaching? And so he was saying that the embryonic development of creatures shows that the theory of evolution is true. Well, these are actually fraudulent drawings, and I'm going to give you a quote from Dr. Michael Richardson. He's an embryologist at St. Michael's in England, and here's what he said in an interview in London's The Times. He said, referring to Haeckel's embryo drawings, he said, quote, because they, I should mention that Dr. Richardson actually conducted a test where they photographed the growing embryos of 39 different species, including man, and he compared them to Haeckel's pictures, his drawings. And Richardson said this in The Times. He said, quote, "This is one of the worst cases of scientific fraud. It's shocking to find that someone one thought was a great scientist was deliberately misleading. It makes me angry. What Haeckel did was to take a human embryo and copy it, pretending that the salamander and the pig and all the others look the same at the same stage of development. They don't. These are fakes," unquote. Dr. Michael Richardson, embryologist. So, and by the way, this word fake, you can apply that to the whole theory of evolution. Piltdown Man would be another great example.
Piltdown Man, I guess where they found a tooth in someone's skull, and they said, "Here, we've proven evolution, the missing link," right?
Well, the Piltdown Man was actually a skull and a jawbone, which and when they was dug up, and it was announced in 1912 in England. It was found near Darwin's home, actually. Not that he had anything to do with it. He was already dead. But the announcement in the New York Times, with its, the announcement was Darwin theory proved true. But about 40 years later, they found that the lower jawbone was actually an orangutan jaw, which somebody had stained to make it look old, and they filed down the teeth on it, and they planted it together in a pit along with a human skull, which they also stained to make it look old, and that succeeded in fooling the leading scientists at the British Museum. And that's just one more example of how fraud has been perpetrated in the name of science by evolutionists.
Now, one of the biggest people who promote evolution will tell us that the radiocarbon dating is sort of flawless, that the Earth is billions and billions and billions of years old, and everybody knows that. And can you address that issue? I mean, there are Christians. I'm what I would call a young Earth Christian. There are those who are into the gap theory. The Earth is millions of years old, and the Bible has these gaps. So, and I know you addressed it in the book. You didn't come out with any. But what? Talk a little bit about the radiocarbon dating and how that factors into the evolution issue.
Well, I should mention that for Darwin's theory to work, it would take millions of years. And for that reason, they had to attack what the Bible says, which is that God created the world in 6 days. When you do that, you're not only validating evolution, by the way, you're also taking away the glory of God and what he can accomplish. And there are certain measures they will use, one of which the best known is the radiometric dating to try to prove an old Earth. And that was done in order to create the proper time frame to make Darwin's theory workable. But these theories of that underpinned the radiometric dating depends on a lot of assumptions. As far as radiocarbon dating, which is based upon a comparison of regular carbon to what they call radiocarbon. Radiocarbon will decay, and regular carbon does not. So the idea is if you can compare the amount of radiocarbon to regular carbon, you can detect the age. The problem is that it depends on a lot of assumptions, such as that the ratio of radiocarbon to regular carbon was always the same as it is today. But if there was a flood of Noah, which we believe in the Bible, believe there was a great flood, the ratio of radiocarbon, if it even existed back then, could have been totally different. It also assumes that there's been no contamination of the specimen, and I have a lot of quotes from scientists in my book, Tornado in a Junkyard, on the great unreliability of that method. And the other thing I would say about radiocarbon dating is that even radiocarbon scientists will tell you can't date anything beyond 100,000 years because after 100,000 years, there wouldn't be any radiocarbon left. It would already have decayed uh-huh. beyond a measurable amount. There are other methods they use, such as the rubidium, strontium, and so forth, but those are also based on assumptions. It would be very easy in the past for I shouldn't say easy, but very possible that atomic clocks were reset and that the rate of radioactive decay, which they're using as a basis for the Earth to be billions of years old, would be falsified. But even those have often been shown to be erroneous. Just to give an example, one example of that, okay, Richard Leakey, famous anthropologist, discovered a skull. He called it Skull 470 or 1470, and he had radiometric testing done on the rock samples was found in. It was found that the skull was 200 million years old based on that radiometric test. Well, and human evolution was supposed to have started only like 5 million years ago, so they, based on that, they threw out the rocks, and he submitted new ones, right? And so, in other words, radiometric dating is very plastic. If the rocks don't fit the theory, they throw them out, and so it's not at all this consistent or reliable time measure that they have made it out to be.
I know there's some issues with the age of the Earth because certain things are the theory of decay, for example, which make an old Earth impossible. And, you know, the proximity of the moon, the gravitational pull, the oxygen in the air, the population of our planet, for example, we would probably have 100 times more people, and many, many other factors that lead into the notion that it was most likely a young Earth, because of what I believe. I had a friend that told me he used to teach in a public school, and he became a Christian. He was an atheist at one point. And in the math class, he would introduce creation, and every so often he'd get a little reprimand, you know, so, hey, knock it off, stop doing that. He started working in a Christian school, and he was, in a Christian high school, I can have a free reign here. He started talking about a young Earth, and they reprimanded him, and they eventually fired him because the Christian school was more interested in what the world had to say about evolution and creation, and couldn't reconcile the fact that, you know, this man had a young Earth perspective from, and he was a trained scientist, so. It's interesting that he was better off in the secular environment. He was treated a little bit better. So
yes, it's very shame that
we got 2 minutes left. Give us some information about how they can get your book. The name of the book, and by the way, why did you call it? What you call it? The Tornado Through a Junkyard.
The title, I give thanks to Sir Fred Hoyle. He was a British astronomer, and someone asked him what the odds were of higher life forms coming about through chance Darwinian processes, as is claimed. And he said the odds were the same as a tornado sweeping through a junkyard and leaving behind a perfectly assembled Boeing 747. I love that imagery, and I thought it would make an appealing title. So the title of the book is Tornado in a Junkyard. And again, you can read about this whole creation evolution debate more. We just touched the surface today. There's so much mutations and the odds against the original life.
Only half an hour we have.
Yeah. So. There's so much we could talk about. The fact that there's no transitional forms that Darwin talked about, there's so much. But it's all in the book, Tornado in a Junkyard, as well as other good sites. If you go to a website and click on sites, I've got a list of good creation websites like Answers in Genesis and True Origins that people can click on and get more information. So that's jamesperloff.com. And thank you, Hal, for having me on this show.
Well, glad to have you on. This is Camp Constitution Radio, heard every Monday night, 7:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on WBCQ The Planet, which broadcasts out of Monticello, Maine, on Arista County. But, Jim, God bless you, and we'll have you on again.
Well, it has been a blessing, Hal. Thanks so much. Talk to you later.
Okay, bye now.
Bye-bye.